Welcome back. It's a Tuesday, the 14th day of February, 2022. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and there's a whole lot of serious news going on in the world today, most of it the continuing theme of destroying everything that once not only made America great, but helped us to understand that we were blessed by a creator who has since been kicked out almost entirely from the public square. And it looks day by day like we're reaping that increasingly bitter harvest. But given the variety of things we need to talk about today, I think this story from Zero Hedge via the Organic Prepper blog as well is a particularly appropriate way to start things off. We're only 2 months into 2023, it begins. Much water has already passed under the bridge. And what a year it's shaping up to be. And everybody who's paying attention probably has an understanding what the author means. To anyone still involved, though, with the Chinese balloon drama, he begins. Even folks, your host interjects here, if that's what it really is. Let me remind you that the U.S., and in fact the entire world, was invaded by China long ago. Products and dopamine-inducing apps, farmland acquisition, shady investments, and of course, government collusion, even buying some of the highest offices in the land in a lot of places and on several continents, are all evidence of this. And that's only the part we know of. As you may recall, there are also unknown unknowns, and who'd be surprised to find out there's probably a whole lot more, especially given that now the claim is those sneaky airships have been flying in the stratosphere since God knows when. NORAD certainly doesn't seem to, or at a bare minimum, it doesn't look like they were telling the people they were supposed to. And as you can guess, folks, we've only heard the beginning of that story, and no doubt there'll be propaganda galore still to come. But one thing is for sure, even if the intent here is to mask the arrival of an EMP and a wave of these things, it's no doubt doing double duty as a smokescreen as well. Because, if you want to stay ahead of the curve, notes the author, there are other events taking place around the globe that certainly deserve more attention, or at least deserve some attention that they're not getting. NSA whistleblower Ed Snowden says the hysteria over UFOs being shot down over America and Canada is a distraction from, well, any number of things, but he picks out specifically Seymour Hersh's story about how the U.S. was responsible for blowing up the Nord Stream pipelines, literally an act of war to kick off World War III. I guess you could argue that's an important story being covered up, or maybe just ignored completely by the waste stream. Fabian Omar's story focuses more on the economic things that are being ignored. Like, for example, the Lebanese Central Bank recently announced a 90% exchange rate devaluation effective the 1st of February. The pound's rate is much lower than that in the black market, where 99.9% of the country's economy and population now find themselves. But it's still a big blow, and it shows the depth of the country's currency failure. Could that, will that happen here? Well, the Lebanese Central Bank has never had the power, legitimate or not, of the fiat dollar-based anti-American Central Bank, you know the name. But, to use the biblical metaphor, the handwriting is certainly on the wall. Meanwhile, the Bank of England's been warning about the worst year of growth there since the Great Depression. Argentina has just unveiled their own 2,000 peso note to keep up with their accelerated currency devaluation, and 95% so far year-to-date inflation. Why, they're even better at it than the Biden Fuhrer, but they had a head start. The peso keeps plummeting, and the black market there is in full steam right now. But it's not all gloom and doom on the worldwide currency meltdown front, because at least Europe got a lucky break this year, and Germany in particular. Thanks to an unusually mild winter, the expected carnage in the country as a result of unaffordable energy has not materialized to nearly the extent that it might have. Although further blackouts and closures can't be ruled out completely, and we've still got a little ways till spring. But the message is clear. What seems to be a lucky break is no reason to quit preparing for what's coming. And who knows, folks, maybe that was all part of the deep state's deal with Germany for letting them blow up their pipeline anyway. Am I kidding? Maybe. But there's a serious message here regardless. The U.S. power grid is unstable, to put it mildly, and there are certainly those in positions of power, if not real authority, that intend to destroy it. And if that's not obvious by now, it may be a long time after it's gone before people wake up and realize what was so long in coming. And there are certainly lots quicker ways to take it out than the continuing green death spiral. Just be aware that the economy, too, globally, is not only melting down, but has been deliberately sabotaged in so many ways and on so many levels. So don't be distracted by the balloons. Oh yeah, and bear in mind that there's almost always another agenda, and it might even be the long-awaited alien disclosure. Although personally, I'm in the camp of those who agree that it'll probably happen after World War III, which means we're still seeing the setup. But while we're on the subject, let's continue with the economic meltdown, where the admittedly bogus inflation figures from the Bureau of Lying Statistics have come out, and actually that of course is bureaus plural. Zero Hedge's headline says that core CPI has now risen for the 32nd straight month, among other aspects of the report. As a reminder, they note CPI revisions hit Friday, rewriting the entire last 12 months higher by an average of around, 0.1% per month. So while the trend going into today's much-anticipated CPI figure is the Fed's friend, we're still further away from their target even before we saw today's print. And so, after rising 0.1% month-over-month last month, the consensus among the so-called experts was for a re-acceleration, who could have thought it, to 0.5% month-over-month in January, and that is what printed, prompting a hotter-than-expected 6.4%. How's that for three or so times the Fed's target year-over-year CPI print, and that's even higher than expectations. But yes, it was the 32nd straight month of rising core CPI, and do we even need to say it? It's outstripping any alleged gains in wages along the way. And if you realize, folks, that the real inflation is many times higher than what they're actually admitting, it's worse than that. Shelter inflation, by the way, overall is up almost 7.9%. That's up from December as well. It's the highest on record. And rent inflation is up over 8.5%, also the highest on record. But guess what? Used cars and trucks are cheaper, maybe because people can't afford to put fuel in them. Here's, I guess you'd call a related story. The Biden-Fuhrer's puppet masters have announced their pick for who's going to lead the White House National Economic Council. And it's Federal Reserve Vice Chair Lael Brainard, one of the most dovish and, guess what, really progressive members of the Fed. According to Wall Street Journal, citing people familiar with the matter, and they're saying the announcement could come as soon as today, although it's no surprise to pretty much anyone. And this, say the Wall Street Journal's analysts, could allow Brainard to eventually succeed Janet Yellen as the Treasury Secretary if Weekend at Biden's continues into 2024. From there, let's talk about some really serious stuff and the not specifically economic part of the continuing and probably increasingly obviously intentional U.S. economic meltdown. Two more trains have derailed after the real nasty catastrophe in Ohio last week. Say the reports, first it was Ohio, and there's more news on that front we'll get to in just a second, then Texas, and most recently South Carolina. Early Monday morning in East Texas, an 18-wheeler collided with a train. The truck was then dragged half a mile down the tracks, and the accident, they do put it in quotes in Zero Hedges coverage, derailed 21 cars operated by Union Pacific. And when first responders arrived, guess what? The truck driver was dead. And once again, the train was carrying hazardous materials. So although this time, the crash didn't rupture any of them. Later in the day, in Ennery, South Carolina, yet another train derailed. That's three within a very short period of time in the once-free United States. And can you say it with me, folks? Yet another amazing string of coincidences having to do with the supply chain. The lead-up to that story, though, goes like this. These derailments came 10 days after a 150-car Norfolk Southern freight train derailed in the town of East Palestine, Ohio. And 20 of the cars carried hazardous materials that caused a massive fire and released unbelievable amounts of toxic chemicals. This may be, says one bit of coverage, the largest environmental disaster in U.S. history, although that's not precisely the way it's being covered. One of the stories aggregated in Zero Hedges coverage says that while the U.S. government, sick, is dispensing millions of dollars in resources to treat balloons as an existential crisis, a small town in Ohio on the Pennsylvania border finds itself engulfed in what actually looks like a real apocalypse. Perhaps by design, all of the drama surrounding violations of U.S. airspace by Chinese spy initiatives seems to have done well to keep what is becoming one of the worst environmental disasters in recent memory, at minimum, from getting any real headlines. The chaos began last week when a train of more than 100 cars derailed in East Palestine near the state's border, a town of 5,000 residents. The accident launched 50 of those 100 freight cars from the tracks, 20 of which were carrying hazardous materials, 10 of which were detailed. And while the accident had no fatalities immediately, five of those cars contained pressurized vinyl chloride, a highly flammable carcinogenic gas. But it gets worse. In order to address the volatile scenario around the crash site, Ohio Emergency Management Agency executed its plan of venting the toxic gas with what was called a controlled burn. If you've seen the pictures, controlled looks like a little bit of an overstatement. But this was in order to avoid an uncontrolled explosion, which presented a risk of even more catastrophic damage. Or so people were told. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine said that drastic temperature changes made them decide to go ahead with what might avoid an explosion with the potential of deadly shrapnel traveling up to a mile. However, that operation sent large plumes of toxic smoke containing the vinyl chloride along with, are you ready for this, phosgene, hydrogen chloride, and other gases into the air as flames from the control burn raged on literally for days. And you may recall the name phosgene, folks, from World War I history. This was a poison gas used as a chemical weapon in the First World War, later outlawed by convention. A later update from Zero Hedge summarized the situation by saying, "Get the hell out of there," as Ohio's apocalyptic chemical disaster rages on. Following the controlled burn, the story continues, local authorities received multiple concerning reports from residents outside of the mile-long radius of the evacuation area. One local farmer reported the sudden deaths of many animals on the premises of his farm, and put it this way, "The chemicals we're being told are safe in the air, well, that's definitely not safe for the animals or the people." For example, the owner of a local dog kennel in nearby Darlington, Pennsylvania, decided to leave her home despite the fact it was more than 10 miles away from the site of the controlled burn. And after fleeing to Boardman, Ohio, 15 miles from the derailment, the woman stated that she received multiple reports of dead chickens, fish, and other animals from friends and acquaintances. One affected resident told her their 2-year-old dog was let out to go to the bathroom but never returned. They later found it dead in the yard. There are, of course, warnings that the poor air quality might present long-term health risks to the public, including the carcinogenic effects of the chemicals. Carcinogens like vinyl chloride can cause cancer in organs, including the liver, according to Kevin Chris, professor of chemical and biomolecular engineering, who also serves as director of Ohio University's Air Quality Center. And the story summarizes it this way. While the immediate risk presented by a possible explosion following the derailment of the train may have been averted, the emergency response may in fact become an instance of the cure being worse than the disease it sought to remedy. Newsweek says the coverage noted a startling trend of more than a dozen reported train wrecks across the United States since this year started. Quote, "The Palestine wreck is the tip of an iceberg and a red flag," said Ron Kamenkow, an Amtrak locomotive engineer and former Norfolk Southern freight engineer, to The Guardian. So yeah, you can recognize the slant here, upcoming. He's also the secretary for the Railroad Workers United, a nonprofit labor group that coordinates with the nation's rail unions. Said Kamenkow, "The series of derailments is a wake-up call about the nation's rail workforce having dwindled as railroads focus on profits rather than safety. Or maybe, folks, it's even something worse than the progressive agenda might want you to know. I mean, gee, what do you think's happened to the quality of the entire national workforce since the pandemic?" He warned, "If something isn't done, it's going to get a lot worse, and the next derailment could be cataclysmic." Leah Holman's coverage focused on several aspects of the story, including the fact that people are starting to ask why there's been a near total media blackout on this story. He quoted a tweet from Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, who wrote, "East Palestine, Ohio is undergoing an ecological disaster because authorities blew up the train derailment cars carrying hazardous chemicals, and press are being arrested for trying to tell the story." Oh, but UFOs! What, she asks, is really going on? Says Holman, "The vinyl chloride spilled into the groundwater and several creeks, including Sulphur Run, Leslie Run, Bull Creek, and Little Beaver Creek, which drains into the Ohio River." Local ABC News affiliate WYTV 33 interviewed hazardous chemicals expert Sil Caggiano, who told them, quote, "We basically nuked a town with chemicals so we could get a railroad open." He advised residents to get physical and document their health conditions so that if they later contract cancer or some other autoimmune disease that might be caused by exposure to toxic chemicals, they could have a potential legal claim against the railroad and state authorities. Now, ironically, folks, this is interesting given that a lot of those people may have taken the poison poke and have autoimmune problems for, let's just say, other reasons. But at least this lets the railroads be a scapegoat rather than Big Pharma, and guess which one Big Brother would prefer you focus on? Call it heads they win, tails you lose. And Leah Holman adds one other observation. Chemicals, once they get into the groundwater, tend to move fast, which is why this is a much bigger catastrophe than just East Palestine or even neighboring communities. When you count public drinking water intakes and industries, the Ohio River Basin provides drinking water to about 5 million people. And by the way, one estimate shows that about 25 million Americans live in a rail disaster blast zone. And you gotta ask this question too, notes Tyler Durden for Zero Hedge. Why did it take the alleged Secretary of Transportation, Mr. Chestfeeder, whose only real qualification seems to be what he does in the bedroom, why did it take him, Pete Buttigieg, 10 full days to finally comment on the disaster in East Palestine? Maybe it's because he didn't know what phosgene was, or how trains work. The ongoing crisis, concludes Zero Hedge's coverage, represents an environmental and humanitarian disaster that hasn't been seen in the United States in recent memory. The scenes from East Palestine look as if they're taken straight out of a horror film depicting nuclear winter. But in spite of that, the magnitude of this story has been seemingly scrubbed from public view, and the national media outlets, as they instead continue to run sensationalist headlines about issues that might not seem quite as severe by comparison, like balloons that may not even be balloons, but might be a precursor to the alien invasion that somebody seems to want Americans to fall for. And let's not forget, all of this helps to cover up the shortcomings of state and federal agencies tasked with emergency response management, whose continued lack of accountability, says the piece, enables them to fail the American public time and time and time again. Almost like it's part of the plan, don't you know? And I think it's appropriate to add one more observation in here. Yeah, derailments can happen as a result of incompetence writ large. Or there could be something worse, especially when you see a whole string of these things. Bang, bang, bang. Oh yeah, and don't even think about the entirely coincidental string of burning chicken farms and food processing facilities. Here's another no-brainer, no-surprise story. There's been another mass shooting at a gun-free killing zone, this time at Michigan State. As of press time, says a Zero Hedge update, police haven't named the dead suspect, but he is a 43-year-old black man not affiliated in any way with Michigan State University, and they said, quote, we have no idea why he came to campus tonight, unquote, although some of us might suspect, yeah, you do, and he killed three people and critically injured five more before turning the gun on himself and ending it all. Now, to be honest, folks, these stories have gotten so common, in the gun-free killing zones, of course, that your host generally doesn't even bother with them. But this one certainly has a couple of interesting characteristics worthy of note. For example, while the manhunt was underway, police held a press conference announcing that, quote, initial information is that the suspect is a black male, shorter in stature, wearing red shoes, a jean jacket, and a ball cap. They actually have pictures, and guess what they don't list in that description? Oh yeah, he was wearing a mask, too. And he seems to have roamed around that gun-free killing zone masquerading as a college campus for quite a while. But here's what the Waystream Press isn't emphasizing the way your host thinks they ought to. He was violating the campus's no-gun rule! How dare he! I guess he didn't really care that it was a gun-free killing zone. Or just maybe, folks, he knew it and took advantage of it because it made for easy pickings. The MSU.edu Policies and Procedures page notes that the entire university workforce, except for their rent-a-cops, are prohibited at any time while on property owned, leased, or otherwise controlled by the university or in the course of their employment anywhere from possessing or using any firearm, even if they have a concealed weapons permit or otherwise authorized by law to keep and bear arms. Now, this would almost be funny if it wasn't so stupid, or as has been obvious for years now, catastrophic. Here's a story, actually two of them, dating back almost exactly 1 year from local media in the MSU area. Michigan State University prohibits students, faculty, and staff, any of them, from carrying all firearms on campus. However, it said, visitors with a concealed pistol license, CPL, are allowed to carry a gun on campus, so as long as it's concealed, they can get away with it. But the Students Against Gun Violence idiot group at MSU is trying to change that rule. Are you ready for this? No, they don't want to be able to carry guns to protect themselves from exactly what just happened. They want to make sure that concealed weapons are prohibited. Well, unless somebody comes in carrying a concealed weapon like this guy did for the obvious reason of killing the disarmed sheeple without anybody being able to respond. One of the Students Against Gun Violence snowflakes said, I don't think we've done enough in the past. I believe everyone should feel safe going to work or school, and getting this rule changed is a great step toward a safer environment. Here's another quote from the same airhead, different media outlet, who said, there's really no foreseeable reason for people to be carrying firearms on campus. Well, unless, obviously, they intend to do exactly what this guy did, without armed opposition from the intended victims. More of the quote, students can't carry firearms, faculty can't carry firearms, so it's essentially just visitors on campus carrying firearms, she said, unquote. Yeah, you got it. Let's just ignore facts and history, and I'll pretend that gun-free killing zones aren't exactly what both of those things prove they really are. What a bunch of uneducated, dumbed-down ninnies. It does make me wonder, folks, if any of those sheeple who survived their near-death encounter might actually awaken at this point and get a clue. On that score, I have one interesting story that I've had sitting on my desk for a couple of days now, but it fits here, and it might especially resonate with some of those MSU students, I can't help but suspect. U.S. ban on pot users owning guns has been ruled unconstitutional. It's yet another defeat for the gun grabbers, says Zero Hedge's summary. A federal law claiming to bar marijuana users from owning and possessing firearms, Second Amendment be damned, of course, has been ruled unconstitutional. And in a 54-page ruling handed down in Oklahoma, U.S. District Judge Patrick Weyrich said the government cannot claim that defendant Jared Harrison's, quote, mere status as a user of marijuana justifies stripping him of his fundamental right to possess a firearm, unquote. And that, says the piece, is just the latest of many rulings against gun restrictions following in the wider wake of last June's watershed U.S. Supreme Court ruling called New York State Rifle and Pistol Association v. Bruin, which established a test that federal judges across the country should now apply, if they feel like it anyway, when evaluating unconstitutional gun control laws, since the meaning of words like shall not seem to escape them. No, it's not do they infringe something that they don't know anything about anyway. It's is this new gun control infringement, quote, consistent with the nation's historical tradition of firearms ownership, unquote. Big Brother, says the story, not wanting any of the peons to have anything with which to defend themselves against what is obviously planned, is expected to appeal the decision. Hey, I'm going to suggest this might just fit here, too. Anybody remember how the Biden-Fuhrer bragged that your guns are no good against F-14s? And once we're done getting our way, you're not going to be allowed to keep them anyway. Maybe fighter jets aren't as good at shooting down some things as you might have thought. Yeah, you probably heard this part of the story hyped. The military on Sunday shot down an unidentified high-flying object. No, not a balloon, or maybe it wasn't a balloon, flying above Lake Huron. The New York Times reported the Air Force took out the UFO with a Sidewinder air-to-air missile in a strike ordered by the dynamic, senile puppet master. But Fox News reported on Monday that it actually took two $400,000 Sidewinder missiles to bring the object down, because the first one missed. And notes Fox, the heat-seeking missiles cost about $400,000 a pop. So that's several dozen American taxpayers' total contribution to Big Brother's largesse for the year that literally went nowhere, or did it? Turns out it may have landed, said the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mark Cismilli, somewhere in the lake. And here, maybe you thought Big Brother had managed to make 22 ammunition expensive. There's at least one more story today that the waste stream doesn't seem to want you to hear much about. Hence, it's more important to focus on balloons and popping them, even if it's almost $500,000 a pop. Anyway, says J.D. Hayes from Natural News, a stunning new report published last week claims that lawyers for the erstwhile fake president, senile quid pro Joe Biden, work secretly, that's the way they always do things, isn't it, with the National Archives in order to arrange for the return of those classified documents that he took with him when he left the vice presidency, and he didn't have the authority to declassify them, like the guy that they raided Mar-a-Lago, you may note, when he left the vice presidency, though, in January 2017. According to Breitbart News, the documents involve those discovered at the imposter president's private office in Penn Biden Center in Washington District of Criminals. There have been questions, says the story, surrounding the classified documents since they were first reported, like why did he have them, what legal authority, if any, did he have to possess them, and whether the National Archives knew about it, and when. Of course, they didn't tell the American people about it till well after the rigged midterms. Turns out, though, according to House Oversight Chair James Comer of Kentucky, the Archives was previously instructed, either by the White House or the Department of Just Us, and is there a real difference there, to hide the initial revelations about the Biden classified document scandal from the American people, which shouldn't surprise anyone. The initial trove was discovered November 2nd, less than a week before the midterms. You didn't hear about it until lots later, of course. And later still, within the last week, the National Archives released 74 pages of email showing an Archives lawyer coordinating with the Biden attorneys to secretly retrieve those classified materials from Penn Biden Center before the 2022 midterm elections, and long before the American people were even lied to about it. Oh yeah, and there may have even been other stuff stored in other locations too, like Philadelphia and Boston. A close with a continuing story that we really don't even have all the facts on yet. The man who literally is Project Veritas, James O'Keefe, which has done more real journalism in the last couple of years than all of the major criminally negligent networks combined, seems to have been ousted by a turncoat board of directors. That seems to be how things work in a fascist dictatorship, when truly private investigative journalism won't play ball with its public master. But now, says another story from Natural News, there may be hope, because big donors to Project Veritas, disgusted with this perfidy, have served notice to the co-opted board of directors that they're not going to put up with it, sending a cease and desist order concerning O'Keefe's reported firing, basically saying they'd better back off and do what the funds were actually supposed to be used for, and O'Keefe was doing. And especially of late. But remember, folks, if evil can't co-opt its enemy, it's still happy just to destroy it. Be not deceived, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.